Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
Hello and welcome to Bookworm. This is Michael Silverblatt, and today, well, every time I make the mistake of saying on the air that we rarely do first novels on Bookworm nowadays, a flock of them come along that I love, and here's another one. This is Beast Season by Myla Goldberg. It's published by Doubleday. And, well, it's kind of an amazing book in a sense. It reminds me of a latter-day Franny and Zooey. In Franny and Zooey, for people who are no longer Salinger conscious, Franny becomes susceptible to chanting, to the God prayer, and by the end of the novella, she's taken off in a state of what others regard as depression and dementia, and what she regards as ecstasy. Right. And this seems to me...
Wow. I mean, of course I read it. I love Salinger. I read everything he's ever written, but that maybe it was just seated in the back of my mind. But
it's interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Huh. So I thought, since the literature of child ecstasy, child religious ecstasy, is not very extensive, I wondered what the seeds for the bee season were.
Right. Well, that's a real good question. And I really have no idea, which is something I'm really glad about. The writing process for me is pretty instinctual. I don't do a whole lot of planning in advance. And luckily, I have an extremely active or overactive imagination and a really active subconscious. And I give a lot of the credit for what happens to my subconscious, basically.
Well, it seems as if the inception point is that, on the one hand, Eliza Nauman is a girl who belatedly reveals herself to have a gift for spelling.
Right.
She's chosen for the spelling bee. Her father is a cantor, but more than that, a Jewish mystic, and more than that, someone who's gone through the 60s when mysticism was abetted by LSD.
Right.
And he is one of the believers in what Kabbalists tend to believe, that the sacred texts are anagrams for received visionary wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And so he comes to suspect that his daughter might be a vessel capable of understanding the anagrammatic nature mm-hmm. of God in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where does...
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. I took a class in Jewish mysticism in college that was taught by just a fantastic professor. And Elliot Ginsberg, if you are out there, thank you. I don't know where you are anymore. But he was an amazing professor. And he got me really, really going on the ideas. And we actually, one of the things we read was an article about the parallels between the LSD experience and Jewish mysticism. And especially, I just got really, really going on Abraham Abulafia, who's the mystic that Saul is so taken with in the book. And so that just kind of seeded itself in my brain. I mean, that was in 92, I guess, and it just stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when this one came around, and it started with spelling bees, because I had a friend who had been, I wasn't in bees. I misspelled tomorrow in fourth grade, and that was it. But I had a friend who was in the Nationals three times running. And so she had been talking to me about it. And so that happened. And then one morning, literally, I just woke up and I said, oh, my God, spelling and ecstatic mysticism, they're like the same, you know. And I just all of a sudden that connection had been made. And I guess I kind of, for me, the seeds of writing a book I liken to what makes poetry work.
Mm-hmm.
What makes poetry work, I think, are these amazing jumps that when you read them are very intuitive, but unless you're the poet, you wouldn't have thought of them. They come, you know, they seem dissimilar if you were thinking about it, but then when you read them on the page, yes, that makes perfect sense. And so the seeds of this novel for me were a lot like a poem in that I had those jumps and I just went off from there.
Did you have a background in Jewish literature?
Well, I mean, I was raised observant growing up. I did bat mitzvah, Friday night services, the whole nine yards. And No, I wouldn't say in Jewish literature so much. I mean, I'm a huge reader, and I always have been, and so I'm sure that I hit a couple Jews along the way, but it's not like I centered specifically on, like, Isaac Bashevis Singer or, like, anything like that. So.
Because there's a certain tone, maybe because I like this book so much, and this is one of my favorite Jewish writers, but A Lie to Bruno Schultz.
Oh, thank you. Yes, yeah, he is one of my absolute all-time favorite writers as well, and I'm really flattered that you say that, because...
Well, because by the end of The Street of Crocodiles, that mm-hmm. novella, the whole family, the uncle is an electric buzzer, and
right,
you know,
right.
everything has transmogrified
yeah.
so much that you're in a, what, spiritually dislocated, phantasmatic, sort of amazing. Now, by the end of this novel, the little girl who is, what, 9?
Yeah. No, wait. 11.
11?
Yeah.
She is seeing the face of God.
Right.
What gave you the confidence or feeling that you could write a passage like that?
I didn't have a choice, because that's what had to happen. And I didn't know if I'd be able to do it. And what the scene that ends in the book, that scene, is not the original one I wrote. The first one I wrote kind of sucked. it was really, in terms of the imagery, it was very stale, tired imagery. And I wrote that, and that... I can't remember. That actually might have been what the Doubleday people saw first, and then I changed it later. But I wasn't happy with it at all, and I wanted to rewrite it. It's not like I had a choice in the matter. I was just going to have to do it because I knew that was what had to happen, and hopefully I would be able to pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad it... I mean, I'm not totally happy with it still. I mean, I think...
I would think it's the kind of thing that you can never know whether
yeah.
you've done right exactly.
And I don't think I did. I think I did the best I could have done at the time under the circumstances, which is the most I can ask of myself. But already... I mean, I haven't... To tell you the truth, I haven't reread the book since I finished it. I'm deadly afraid to, because I know that if I do that, I'm going to be really unhappy, because I always want to go back and then fix things and I can see the flaws. And that scene especially, I know that I'd probably want to redo the whole thing.
This is your first published novel. Are there a number of stories, and how long
right.
have you been writing?
Well, it's so funny, because like the word first novel is so misleading so much of the time, and in my case, technically, it is my second novel. I wrote a novel before this one that got me my agent and a lot of really encouraging rejection letters, and then I went on from there to write this one. I've been writing since I was 6. It's all I've wanted to do ever. I'd had a couple short stories published, but I can do a short story now and again, but it's not my preferred form, and I'm okay at it, but I'm not great at it. I mean, there are some fantastic short story writers that I completely admire and respect.
Who are your favorites?
For short stories?
Yeah.
In terms of more recently, Nathan Englander's book I thought was brilliant. Stacey Richter, mm-hmm. I really enjoy. Amy Bender's Girl in the Flammable Skirt I thought was really great. Let's see, I think David Foster Wallace's short stories are fantastic.
Where did you study writing, did you?
I was an English major at Oberlin, and I took I was a creative writing minor, which meant I took, I think, maybe 3 classes or something like that, and then that was all for formal schooling. But after college, I actually went to Prague, and I lived in Prague for a year, and I was there 93 to 94, which is when there was an...
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. 2 FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.